Welcome to Dentists, Implants, and Worms, helping you navigate the world of dentistry one vodka soda at a time. As always, from day one, this episode is brought to you by Boyd's Wine and Spirits on Mount Rushmore Road in Rapid City, South Dakota. The finest selection of bourbon and wine for miles around with cold beer, a growler station, and rock bottom prices. Now, here are your co-hosts, Drs. Justin Moody and Randy Huska.
Welcome to another episode of Dentist Implants and Worms, helping you navigate the world of dentistry one vodka soda at a time. And we have a couple of new sponsors. Well, not necessarily new. I mean, Boyd's Wine and Spirits been with us from day one.
Yeah, that's real new.
Yeah, Mount Rushmore Road been our sponsor for 4 years. But Tito's Vodka has joined our the sponsorship, as well as some Fireball.
What's a Tito's mascot? I mean, we got the dragon.
It's just like a picture, I think. Like, what's a still? It's a picture of a pot still back there. So, on the line, on the phone, is Dr. T-Bone Tarun Agarwal. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
I feel like I'm a regular on this thing.
Hey, like, there's nothing better. There's nothing better.
So, I have a question. Does that mean if I ever see you not drinking Tito's or Fireball, that I can take a picture of it and send it to them and ruin your sponsorship?
That would be rude.
I'm just saying, is that a possibility?
No, because I would not be drinking any kind of competitor's substance. So
he hates wine.
Yeah, like I would. it's just terrible.
I developed a taste for scotch on my recent trip to Scotland.
Really?
And that is what I drink now.
Really? Well, I'm sure it's not
that I drink very much.
I was going to say, it can't be that damn much. One bottle of scotch is going to last you a few years. And so,
easy. Easy, yes. At least.
Yes. Of course, it's a 5-gallon bottle.
You got to golf the old course?
I did. We played 7 rounds of golf. The old course was very nice. We played Royal Dornoch up north. We played the new course. It's funny, they call it the new course, but I think it was built like 200 years ago.
Yeah, right.
So it's kind of interesting. But we had a great time. I went with, I think there's 8 to 12 of us that went. We had a wonderful time. It was a nice break for me.
Perfect. And then you got to get back into it. Tell us how the new teaching center and nonprofit's going.
Oh, it's going good. You know, it's been a interesting year for me. So I haven't made as much progress as I want in some of these things, but we continue to make progress, and that's what's important. We had a tropical storm come through yesterday, knocked out power for a day. So I had to light candles to go to bed yesterday. I don't like to sleep in pitch black.
Really?
I don't like to sleep in fire.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I'm glad you're alive. I'm glad, like, you know, you didn't catch a curtain on fire or something.
Well, I was more worried that the boogeyman was going to come in.
I sleep best when it's just pitch black. Like, when I go to a hotel room and, like, the little fire alarm red light is too, like, I literally have a roll of black electrical tape in my backpack, and I put it over those lights.
And some twist ties and some handcuffs. What else do you have in your bag?
Camera.
I don't. Garbage bags
with a tripod.
You know, I don't think I have to divulge that information to any one of you.
But my problem is in my dream yesterday. Oh, the boogeyman was looked exactly like Randy Huska. So, and I woke up in a panic and a sweat.
So it was a good looking boogeyman.
No, it was not.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Well, what are you doing? Like, what have you been doing lately?
Well, I've just been getting more into work lately. Right now, it's interesting. We should kind of talk about this a little bit, and it'll kind of lead into things I like to talk about when Randy's on the line with us.
My quarterly beatdown.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not going to beat you down. You can beat yourself down. I'm doing a startup right now.
What?
And yeah, but it's unique. It's different. It's a startup within my dental practice. So I am personally moving towards doing only full arch cases. And my goal is to do 6 arches a month. And a 6 to 8 is where I want to get to by end of Q1. And so basically I'm doing a startup.
Tell me how are you internally marketing? What are you doing externally to get those at bats? Because you're gonna have to have some, you know, qualified patients to come in and go through that.
So historically we've averaged like 1.5, sometimes 2 arches per month through just word of mouth, some general dentist referrals, different things like that. But now we're doing some external digital marketing with Google Ads and Facebook. And then we also have our actually my magazine that I typically do is not out right now. I'm waiting. I don't know what I'm waiting on, but I'm waiting to renew that. So that's where we intend to get our 6 to 8 arches per month. That's one of the things that we're doing to get our arches. So like this month we had September, we probably had almost 200 leads through our digital marketing. But these leads are very cold. I mean, I think this is one of the things that a lot of dentists don't understand is that the leads are cold. And of the 200 people that filled out the form and requested a callback, probably 100 of them answered the phone or responded to a text message when we tried to call them back. And of the 100, probably about 30 have come in for consults, and of the 30 that came in for consults, we've closed 3 cases for October.
So 10% of those that come in are leading to surgery.
So far in month one.
For sure.
So we'll get better at it. The other thing that I'm doing differently, because I've done digital marketing for these kind of cases in the past, and I have a dedicated team member that is doing all the phone answering, lead triage, phone answering, the consults, and scheduling for me. So I have a single person that's doing all of that for me.
Gotcha.
So it's a true startup in that sense that I have a dedicated employee, myself, and then we do use my normal assistant from the practice for the cases.
Now, you said like you were in a startup with your own practice, so I presume you still have your associates that are doing the day-to-day stuff. And how about the single implants? Are you still going to do those within your practice, or are you going to move those to the associates?
Yeah, so we've been moving them to our associate partners in the practice. I still have to do some cases that that they're not quite ready to do yet, some cosmetic cases and some more complicated implant cases, you know, something a little bit more than onesie twosies, or, you know, maybe they need some grafting or sinus lifts and things like that. Or, you know, maybe they're really tight cases that may require grafting or something like that. So I'm still doing those as part of the general practice. But my goal is to get to where I'm only doing 6 to 8 arches a month. And my goal is to actually clinically work 6 days a month.
Perfect. You want to work the days that you got these full arches. And now tell me about this. Like, so when the kind of like the snowball rolls in 4 or 5 months, when you're going to like put the finals and stuff in, like, do you think you'll have to increase those days because you got surgery and prosthetic, or just keep it the same?
No, I'm dedicating 2 days a month where we pre-booked our anesthesiologist. Gotcha. And I'm doing three cases. The goal is to do 3 cases a day. So those 2 days are surgery only. And then the other 4 days will be a combination of consults, follow-ups, impressions, delivery, whatever it takes to finalize the case. Which, by the way, goes to show that there's more involvement in the restoration side than there is in the surgical side. There's more skill maybe in the surgical side from what we've taught in school, but the time consuming part is the restoration part of it. And then we're trying to digitize. We're working really hard to get a really good digital process for that as well.
Have you settled in on a, let me go back one bit. I think what you said is like absolutely true. Like you could maybe quantify the surgical side as being maybe more of a physical challenging portion, but time-wise for sure in the restoration. And I think that there's more brain power in the restoration is now you got to, include like what, materials, how we're going to do it, photogrammetry, analog, are you going to, bites, like how are you going to prove it out? Are you going to let them sit in PMAs? Like there's a lot of thought process to
function.
Yeah. And the surgical side is like, okay, like I see this cone beam. I got these bony places. These are my key spots. I'm going to go put them in. And, I actually feel like that is, far easier than the restorative phase.
Well, definitely patients got not come back after surgery and say, I don't like how these sutures look.
Yeah, right.
Well, and to be fair though, a lot of people listening may say that the surgical part is the daunting part for them, but
absolutely,
after about 8 to 10 of these cases, maybe a little bit more, I don't know. After you get a handful of these cases under your belt, the surgeries become somewhat mundane because they are pretty much like Lego. It's like puzzle pieces. You're doing step by step. It's a very formulaic process. There is certainly a lot of pre-planning that goes in to understand, transition line, smile line, bone reduction, volume of material that you need, things like that. And, but the other thing that I found from 4 years ago when I tried to do this and didn't succeed, and now, the first thing, as I mentioned earlier, is I was spending a decent amount of money each month on marketing, but we had relatively untrained people and unfamiliar people at the front office of my regular practice answering the phone. And now I have a dedicated person, trained person answering the phone. So that's one thing that's different. The other thing that's different is the mindset I've had to understand that the selling of these cases, the sales process of these cases is slightly nuanced compared to selling other cases. Look, we're used to selling multi-thousands and tens and 20,000s of dollars of cases, but the consumer the consumer is different. The person that needs to lose all their teeth socioeconomically typically isn't, they're just different. They're different than your person coming in for a full mouth, porcelain rehab or a upper and lower veneer case. There's just a different socioeconomics to that. And the emotions of which they buy with, the amount of work it takes to help them afford that, and then understanding price elasticity to be able to help make it affordable, beyond just affordable, help put it in the budget of people is very important. And I'd like to talk a little about that price elasticity as well.
I think that, I think that, what you said is very spot on, because it's one thing to say, I'm going to focus on full arch or whatever, but it's another thing to, you already said like 200 leads, to 100 that'll even respond to what they did, to 30 come in, to 3 accept, there's a cost per lead generation to, get into your seat. And then, it is a, how powerful is your team in creating that space that the patient can say yes, there's a lot more to that than it just hey, I'm just gonna go do this, right?
Especially if you want to make it a real portion of your practice, not a hey, I do one every quarter or one every so often, but if you want to make it a consistent part of your practice, yeah. There is a lot to it.
Yeah, and that lot to it for me is the best way to really get profitable and really get efficient in that is you got to do the reps, when you get to that, when you get to that, 6 to 8 arches a month, and then you get 6 months into this, you use the word mundane, and what we don't ever want to use is routine, but you do get efficient. You know, you get fish in a treatment plan, you get efficient at placing the implants. You know, like the only thing mundane about what you do is like you probably use surgical guides, which is like, you know, monkey work. I tried to explain to the world last week at the AID, you know, that that's a mundane world of surgical guides. Anyway, that's for another subject.
And the other thing that we've had to change as well is our product offering. And I didn't quite understand that 3-4 years ago. And so part of my challenge is I refuse to do removable. And I know you like removable and I respect you for that, but I don't like removable and I don't want to do those cases. In fact, I find that there's more for me, maybe because of my mentality, overdenture, removable overdentures take more time than fixed hybrids do for me. But the challenge is hybrids is, frankly speaking, out of reach for 95% of the public, if not more, cost-wise. You know, the average arch being anywhere from $25,000 to $35,000, and that's a lot of money. It's a boatload of money.
Well, have you thought at all about, because I know Moody had talked about here, where maybe just go in with a like a Onyx or whatever and just do like a yearly subscription of replacing that.
Yeah, so that's what we did. So our goal now is to bring to market a $15,000 arch.
Well,
with a $1,000 a year subscription to a new printed prosthetic on an annual basis with annual, you know, annual maintenance with the hygiene team. And so I want to get down to the $15,000 mark. And really, what then happens is clinically, the case becomes a one visit case. Now, certainly there's planning that goes into it. There's some follow up that goes into it. But from a pure workflow perspective, then we're down to a single visit, of 2 to 3 hours for this case. And so if I can generate, you know, net revenue, take away some of the costs, net revenue of 11 grand or so, for, you know, let's call it three hours of clinical work, that to me makes more sense financially. In fact, the math I've done is I actually make more profit on a $15,000 provisional arch than I do on a $25,000 final zirconia arch, when you factor in time and opportunity costs of that time.
I agree. And so you said something earlier that, you know, like, you know, those materials weren't available, you know, really like those options weren't available 3 or 4 years ago. And
right.
the truth of the matter is, you know, like we, you know, for the 4 years that we've been running this nonprofit, like fee wise and like affordability wise, like we were, you know, like we were stuck in that overdenture world because of the price of going to full fix. But Randy, you know, spoke right before what I was going to talk about, and that is the ability to now to print. You know, now we got the Onyx Tough,
right?
And the ability to print these, and I think that, and my team here, we're moving. I think we're going to move laterally, maybe away from as many overdentures as we do, and we're going to put more of them into, you know, the fixed and these more economical printed prosthesis. Because if you think about it, like you can break overdentures and you can break, you know, printed things. Well, breaking an overdenture like requires new impressions and all the other things versus just printing something new. And you know, whether you got a locator abutment or you have a multi-unit abutment, like you still have an abutment, right? So
right.
Technology has brought, you know, brought a change to us as well. And
it's democratizing dentistry.
Correct.
For the patient.
Correct. Correct. So
is everything kind of going straight to multi then?
Yeah. Even without cylinders, you know, like
without tie bases. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so like, you know, just using screws through the prosthetic right into the multi-unit, like that's a huge time saver. We know that the titanium chimneys are a weak point within the system for not only debonding but fractures through the porcelain. So the zirconia.
That's just another part, you know, so that You get a
and then, you know, so we're going to bring a 5-axis mill into the practice as well, so that we have a little bit more control and option for those. And the 5-axis mill we're going to get so that we can learn. But if for me, it's an if we want to move beyond that 8-arch a month capacity and we want to get to another level, then we'll start milling we'll consider milling our own final prosthetics in the practice to have more control and to be able to, again, time, it's not cost. It's not the, like, it drives me nuts when somebody says you can print this for $30. For me, it's about saving 2 hours. And my 2 hours is worth way more than a couple of $100 or $300 or even $1,000 in a lab bill. So it does drive, yeah, fundamentally, it drives me crazy when somebody says, oh, and we can print this for so cheap. What I'd rather say is the time and material involved of printing 3 provisional hybrids is the same as printing 1, because if you stack them, you know, with print, the way printers work is it's the number of layers, the height of the print. So if you can place 2 or 3 arches on a single platform at the same height, you can literally print 2 or 3 at one time at the same speed and time involvement. So then in theory, you could have 3 made for your patient up front. Yep. To give to the patient, or to have, you know, kind of like a Ziploc bag as a backup.
Yeah. I love it.
But all of this is not possible, or in my, from my philosophy, not feasible, because, you know, my overarching philosophy is that any good business, and which is what a dental practice is, has to have a firm, strong, relatively recession-resistant general practice, which is a hygiene-driven practice. Because at the end of the day, if shit hits the fan, I can always go back to doing general dentistry. So I'm not a big fan of specialty all-on-X practices. I think there's, you know, when times are great, that's great. But if we ever run into, you know, some significant changes in the world, then you're kind of leaving yourself open to, you know, susceptible issues. But my point being is all of this for me is not possible without having brought in associates and or partners into the practice to give me the freedom and time to be able to experiment with these things. And then going out and doing a real startup, a traditional startup, would be cost prohibitive for me versus taking one operatory in my office and doing a startup within the practice where the practice is running on a ongoing basis and it itself funds and more than funds and funds my life and funds the startup to be able to do it. And I think that's what most people, our other guests, Randy included, miss about the value of associates is the flexibility that it gives you.
Sounds like a segue.
Segue into it.
Perfect.
That is correct. Randy, why don't you have an associate?
I have not pursued it.
I thought you said somebody reached out to you and you were considering something with something.
I did. One guy, young guy, still in his last year of school, so I've talked to him a little bit, but not recently.
Okay. And what happens to your practice when you're down in the pathway for a week or 3, 4, 5 days?
I don't ever come here that long. They get sick of me. No.
2 days. What happened to your practice for 2 days?
Here Thursday, and my hygienist just they worked that day, so it was open for that. But anything longer than that, then it would close.
Yeah.
And so you're paying for that building, whether you're renting it or owning it. You're paying for the equipment there that sits there unused during all of this time. And the truth is. Most dental practices are open about 30 to 35 hours per week, which is probably about 35 to 40% of true business hours for each week. And we spend so much money on technology and real estate and equipment, to only utilize it to 35 to 40% of its true capacity.
I can't argue.
Randy, what are we going to do to get you to get an associate, my man?
I just don't know. I just have a hard time pulling the trigger just because I've been just the Lone Ranger for so goddamn long that I just don't know how to do it.
And that's okay. Look, it's totally okay, man. And that's how Justin, you wouldn't be where you're at, because when you started Pathway, you were still in South Dakota, correct?
Correct.
So could you imagine having started Pathway if you didn't have other dentists in the practice?
I couldn't have.
Yeah. So I couldn't have done 3D or any of the other things that I've been involved with over the years without having others in the practice. And I think, you know, if others don't have that same desire, you know, it's not up to me to create that desire, or, you know, it's not right of me to try to force that desire on them. But I also want people to recognize. And for me, there's also another reason. The more associates individual practitioners hire, the less dentists there are for larger DSOs to take over and commoditize our profession. And I'm not against DSOs. I mean, at some point, I'm sure I'll sell to one.
Right.
But it does commoditize our profession, and we should try to stave that off for as long as we can.
Yeah, I also think that there's eventually going to get to a level where the DSO saturation of the market is maxed, because there's always going to be private practice, especially rural, you know, like there's always going to be rurals that DSOs are going to shy away from just because of the distance and the ability to recruit to those places and such. But, you know, even in the cities and the more, they end up being more in the affluent areas, but there's always going to be a percentage of, you know, private practice owners. We certainly have not seen like it's not the percentage it is today. Like it's going to get deeper. The DSOs are going to get deeper into the landscape, but, it's just part of our world right now. That's just it.
I mean, that's what it is. COVID accelerated the DSO in penetration. And the next recession or major recession will certainly accelerate their penetration. But I also think the other part of it for me is, you know, what's old is new again, in a sense, is that I think the days of the individual solo practitioner are somewhat numbered. I think private practice will look more like a single location group at some point in time with multiple providers.
Well,
cost of technology is outrageous.
I was just going to say that. Like it makes complete sense, because if you want to buy, you know, if you want to buy intraoral scanning and mills and have a lab and a cone beam and lasers and all that stuff, like, you know, if you're a single practitioner, like it sits and collects dust most of the time. But if you've got a 2, 3, 4 doctor practice, you know, all those things get to work all day, and you're actually utilizing the technology. So I agree with you. I think Randy and I, being in rural areas, and me in like a one horse town, I think those areas are going to be less affected by that. You know, hopefully there's always going to be some docs that'll want to live in a smaller community and be the only show in town. And, the pluses are just that, you're the only show in town and you can kind of do what you want to do. Downside is when you want to go on vacation, it's tough on the practice, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Shut her down.
So,
but in some way that's easier in small town America, correct? One, people understand. Two, the cost of living is less. Can you imagine shutting down your office in New York City for 2 weeks if you want to go on vacation?
Yeah. And, you know, it's small town. It's, everyone knows you. And better or worse, they can all reach me on weekends. You know, I don't post my cell phone, but everybody knows it. You know, so you get questions on weekend. You got, oh, geez, I did this or whatever. What do I need to do? And so 90% of the stuff, like on time off, that when you get a call, you handle it verbally over the phone and set them up to come in or whatever. So it's just it's a different animal than a big city.
Well, to a certain degree, it's not that terribly different. I mean, today's Saturday, and I went into the office today to take out a failed implant. So that happened. But as a side note, because I'm 30 years removed from small town America. When I grew up in small town America, or my version of small town America, like 7,000-8,000 people. Do they still have yellow pages and white pages in small town America, or do they have Google in those areas?
They still have a yearly thing. It's the Red Book. It's not Yellow Book, but it's a phone book. And you know, once a year, I get some of them thrown on my doorstep, and they go instantly into the dumpster. I mean, I can't imagine. I suppose I know who uses them. It's they're old, you know. That's all I can imagine. I don't know. It just seems like I couldn't imagine paying to be in it anymore. And I was for a long time. But
there's a whole generation of people that don't even know what yellow pages or white pages are.
Absolutely.
And there's my generation might be the last one that knew of that.
There's also a whole generation of people who don't know how to use their phone. And that generation is slowly phasing out, though.
I think they call them boomers.
Well, even a lot of the boomers know, but there's just some that, you know, that old rancher pulls out his flip phone, you know, when he's in the op and talking to me. And I'm pretty sure that he doesn't Google anything.
Well, I was hoping that we were going to get into a nice long conversation with Randy about associates, but he just pretty much says he just pretty much agrees that he just hasn't done it.
I just haven't pulled the trigger. Moody stepped away a second. I think he's going to go blow his nose.
That's okay. So Randy, do you ever think you'll pull the trigger?
I kind of have to. I mean, it's just one of those things.
Or do you think you'll pull the trigger when it's time to transition out?
Well, you know, and I don't know when that time to transition out is either. But, you know, I don't know that any single doc's ever going to come in and be able to afford to buy me out. You know, that's certainly an issue, you know. So I don't know.
So another thing, Randy, how old are you?
59.
Do you know that the age of transitioning out of practices will start being in the mid-40s to late-40s in the next decade? And our generation, or your generation for sure, always looked at transitioning out as a end-of-career transaction, whereas my generation, or maybe certainly the generation slightly after me, will look at it as a plateau transition out, probably in the mid-40s, late-40s, as the ideal timeline to transition out of their practice.
I guess I fucked that up, didn't I? What would you transition?
Well, I mean,
what do you transition out to when you're 45 or 50?
Private equity, DSOs, because the multiples are so much greater than a private sale, and and then in the current environment, at least, and then, you know, the holdback as an equity share in the second recapitalization. And then you stay on as an associate for some period of time. And so I think our profession is going to look dramatically different in the coming decade. And we could argue it's better, we could argue it's worse, but it's going to look different. And for me, the key is I don't want to get left behind or feel left behind. So that's why for me, I keep trying to just figure out what does it take to stay relevant in business, in my case, in the dental business.
Well, obviously I have to pull the trigger on something and wrap it up.
Yeah, but, you know, that's fair. So what else is new with you, Randy?
What's that?
What else is, is Justin back?
No, he's... We may wrap this up.
What else is new with you, Randy?
I went to Sirona World, looked at a lot of the toys. So,
you see any toys you like?
Yeah. I mean, I love toys. They tend to be expensive, but so
yeah, that's okay. What toys caught your eyes this time?
Oh, I did order that Prime Connect, that laptop scan.
Oh, the portable Prime scan?
Because I've been looking for another scanner anyway, and that just would blend right in, you know.
Does it require the laptop?
It comes with the laptop, yeah.
No, but does it require a laptop? Can you plug it into a desktop?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I guess I never.
Yeah.
But it's, you know.
That would be nice.
I need another one anyway. You know, I use mine for a lot of restorative or whatever, and then someone always grabs it to go scan for this or scan for Night Guard or scan for some Sure Smile or whatever. So,
Could you ever imagine 10 years ago that we'd be scanning for Night Guards, whitening trays, all this stuff?
Absolutely not. No.
And I mean, it's crazy.
And now, I mean, it's, you know, I can't remember the last time we took an alginate. And I took the model trimmer out of my lab. I'm moving along.
Yeah, no. See, you've moved along. And imagine we don't have dark rooms anymore.
Yep. Yep.
Dip tank.
Yeah, it was the old days, wasn't it?
What was that Prime Connect? What did something like that cost? 25, 30 grand?
It's 25.
25. That's a pretty reasonable cost.
And for something that blends in with what I already have so well, you know, since I'm kind of Sirona based anyway on a lot of stuff.
Just so you know, Sirona does not exist culturally or in any way, shape, or form. But
whatever.
But yeah. So, are you printing much these days, Randy?
I'm sorry?
Are you printing much?
Yeah. So obviously we print the night guards, you print the surgical guides. I started using that rapid guide that Sirona has on their Sodexis.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I mean, it's $19. You just design it on the Sodexis, and an hour later you get the design back, the STL, and print it. So $19 is a pretty good deal. So
yeah, absolutely.
And
funny story about printing, actually. So my dad wants to make himself. My dad was a dentist in India, and you know, he's 75 years old. I had to take out a few teeth on him the other day, and they weren't good candidates for immediate implants, or certainly not immediate implants, much less immediate load. So he wants to make himself a flipper, or you know, some kind of removable. I don't make them. So he said, "I'll do it myself." So I said to him, "I'll just print you a model." And he's like, "How the hell do I make something on a printed on a model printed on a sheet of paper?"
Oh, jeez.
So when I said I'll print you a model, yeah, he's thinking like a laser printer.
Oh my goodness.
And but it goes to show, kind of like your comment about people using flip phones and not understanding some of that stuff. It kind of resonated with me that that we're speaking a different language altogether.
Can you imagine? So, what do you say? 75 in India.
Yeah.
Can you imagine his dental school days?
Oh, he graduated dental school in 1974, I think it was 73 or 74. So he started dental school in 1970, or 1968, actually, in India. And so, can you imagine what that must have been like?
No, I wouldn't have a clue.
He comes to my office and he's wondering. I don't even think he thinks I do dentistry. He probably thinks I do something else in there.
That's funny.
But no, it's amazing where technology has come and gone, and where it will get to in the coming years.
I try to keep up for an old guy, but man, it's moving at the speed of light.
It seems, and it's interesting. It goes in waves. We went into a hardware phase where it was all about impression systems or digital scanners and stuff like that. And, you know, now we're moving into a phase where I think we're in the phase where it's about printing hardware. And I think the next phase is going to be about how to use software that really kind of pulls everything together. Because I think that's the missing piece in all of this is the software that really unleashes the power of the hardware. And I think I think that's what we're going to see the focus become. And, you know, CEREC is great. The CEREC is for onesie twosie, you know, restorative dentistry.
Yeah.
The CEREC software itself doesn't really do anything else.
No.
It does some implant crowns, the onesie twosie implant crowns. But, you know, if your patient's missing a tooth and you need to make a flipper, or if you need to design a Essex, or, you know, you want to make a night guard, you want to do that stuff, you know, that stuff doesn't exist in that platform. They have some of that in their in-lab platform.
Yeah.
But software is like 3Shape, Exocad. Exocad is what we use in our practice. And then, you know, then Straumann will figure out how to combine toe diagnostics and dental wings, and Vista will figure out how to make the DTX studio compete. And, you know, it's going to be an interesting time in software integration and really getting to a really high level of integrated digital dentistry where what scanner and what impression system and what 3D x-ray system or what printer you have, and whether they're from one brand or three different brands, will become moot points. They'll just be pieces of hardware.
Yep.
That's all controlled by a software that controls everything. And so that to me is very exciting to see, to hopefully see where that kind of develops.
Can't wait to learn that with my new associate.
Well, so we'll talk about that 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Oh my God. How's winter coming along in your area?
We're in the 70s still. So in about 6 weeks, we'll be shoveling probably.
You think so?
I don't know. Yeah. Well, yeah. I remember one year we had like 10 inches of snow on Halloween, but that's not the usual though. That was the exception, and I hope it's not the usual this year. I'm not in the mood for it, but I don't have any say.
Good.
I have no pull in that department.
What? You don't have a direct line to the weatherman?
No, but that, you know, I am more prone to come visit Pathway during the winter months. And escape.
I could. Phoenix is a nice place to go in the winter months.
Absolutely.
Well, it sounds like Justin's still out and about.
He is, and I got to go catch a plane here pretty quick. Here,
perfect.
So I'm going to wrap it up. But,
so we'll wrap it up. You can do the outro.
I guess. Signing off for Justin Moody and Dennis Implants with Worms. It's nice to get my quarterly bashing about associates with T-Bone, and we'll look forward to maybe hitting this again next after the first of the year. Oh,
thank you, Randy.
He's back. I was just signing off. You know how to do it, Moody.
All right. Sorry, I had to go back in the clinic. Thanks for joining us, man, on the short notice. And
anytime, man.
Yeah, this is great stuff. So. All right, for Dentist Implants and Worms, Studio 1A for Arizona, we will catch you on another podcast. Cheers.
Cheers.
That concludes another episode of Dentists, Implants, and Worms. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for telling a friend and throwing 5 stars at us on iTunes. Catch you on another episode. And don't forget the fireball. Cheers.